to do. And I appreciate you having me on to talk about it.
Jim, I can't thank you enough. I mean, you are the best of all time, and to be in your presence, to hear your voice, is the greatest honor of my life. And I sincerely mean that. Thank you so much.
Okay, Troy, take care of yourself, stay healthy, and you have a great day.
Will do. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, you can get JR's book, as he mentioned, at jrsbbq.com. It's Under the Black Hat, My Life in WWE and Beyond. Until next time, bye everybody.
This show originally aired April 18th, 2020. Support comes from Jack Andrea, Kenosha's hometown store since 1911. They may be closed, but they haven't lost their hometown spirit. Visit jackandrea.com to shop their exclusive hometown collection, including Kenosha t-shirts, sweatshirts, mugs, books, and more. This show originally aired July 18th, 2020.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jeff Rasmussen, a retired Racine Unified teacher and administrator who currently serves as president of the Racine Area Retired Educators Association, Steve Brown, a retired professor of education leadership, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Mangi. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. Today, you will hear another program in our special series recorded from home due to and about the COVID-19 crisis and how it is affecting educational programs in Southeast Wisconsin. Today, we have guests from NAMI Racine, which stands for National Alliance on Mental Illness. We will be discussing their program called Ending the Silence, which is designed to promote early intervention and prevention for youth living with mental illness in Racine middle and high schools. I have two guests that are going to tell us about this program. Michelle Gehring is the executive director at NAMI Racine, a role she began in January 2020. Michelle joined the team after working the last 10 years as a clinical assistant professor at UW-Milwaukee with a focus on community and mental health clinical nursing. Michelle also has a background in serving as a nurse with persons affected by HIV/AIDS, homelessness, and healthcare access issues in the cities of Chicago, New York, and Los Angeles. A Racine native, Michelle enjoys the community engagement opportunities and working with NAMI Racine. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi, thank you for having us.
And Nicole Smart is the program director for NAMI Racine County. She leads the Ending the Silence program for NAMI Racine County, and she has been with them for 2 years. She came to NAMI with 10 years of nonprofit experience. She's also someone who has lived experience with mental illness. Welcome, Nicole.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
So I start most interviews these days just by asking about some basic changes due to COVID-19. And though I suppose this program doesn't operate in the summer anyway, or does it? And have you had to adjust due to the COVID crisis? Are you still working from home? Are you back in the office? Or what's happening?
Well, that's a good question. We're working kind of as a hybrid right now. So we're in the office. All of our groups are continuing but being held right now in a virtual format. So our teen talk, our peer support, and our family groups are still up and running but in an online format on a weekly or bi-weekly basis. Mm-hmm. And as far as ending the silence, typically with the traditional school year anyways, it doesn't run in the summer, but we're working closely with NAMI Wisconsin and the other NAMI affiliates as far as, you know, strategies for the fall. They've got some video and virtual training for programs like Ending the Silence, if we could offer them in that way. So there's always kind of behind the scenes conversations happening.
Great. So tell our listeners a little bit about NAMI Racine County. What is the organization and what do you do? You sort of hinted at it by telling us how things have been running differently, but sort of what's the overall mission? What are some of the services that you provide?
NAMI started in 1979. by a group of mothers who had sons in inpatient psych care. They started as kind of a grassroots advocacy education group. And I think one sort of neat fact about NAMI that your listeners might be interested in is that several of the co-founders are still very active in participating with NAMI today. So we offer a lot of our signature programs, the Ending the Silence, which we'll talk about today. We work with training police. We work with families, from children to adults to elder care. We've been doing a lot of virtual groups. We're about to kick off a virtual speaker series every month on a series of mental health topics. And we do just training, support, and advocacy are kind of our big platform. I think Nicole has more specifics too.
Yeah, so Nicole, I guess one of the questions that I'm thinking of is, do you actually offer therapy, or is it more like support and advocacy, or all three?
No, it wouldn't be considered therapy. We don't have any licensed professionals at the office or anything like that. What we provide is peer support. So our peer support is based on the groups being led by somebody who has lived experience. So like for myself, I have lived experience. I'm in a place of recovery. So I lead one of the peer support groups that meets on Tuesdays when we are meeting in person. And providing that lived experience and sharing that with somebody seems to be very powerful when it comes to making a connection with someone. People that live with mental illness tend to feel like they're alone and nobody else can understand what they're going through. So when they meet someone who has experienced things that are very similar to what they experienced, it's kind of like a sigh of relief, you know, like that's how we connect. And so everything that, not everything, but most of the things that NAMI does is very peer focused.
Great. Well, thank you for that. That's probably a lot more than most people knew about the organization. So we're starting out on a good footing. So the specific program we're discussing today is one that interacts with the school system in Racine, and it's called Ending the Silence. So could you describe the program for our listeners?
Sure. This is Nicole. I'll go ahead and speak on that a little bit. I've been doing Ending the Silence since I joined NAMI. So for the last 2 years, and I kind of lead the program right now. So what Ending the Silence is a program that we present to high school and middle school students. We usually try to do it in freshman health classes and then seventh graders. excuse me. The program is set up in a way where there's a lead presenter and a youth presenter. Both most times have lived experience, either as a family member who has someone in their life that lives with a mental illness or as a peer themselves. We do the presentation. It starts with a PowerPoint presentation. Then we talk about the signs and symptoms of mental illness, what to look for if you feel like you're experiencing any of these things. What the resources in the community are, what the resources at school are, what the resources at NAMI are, just to make sure that they're fully educated on, you know, what those things are. But even more importantly, we're getting in front of students who may not have had any experience with someone with mental illness, and we're trying to, I don't want to say normalize it, but get rid of that stigma against people who live with mental illness. And I think if we focus on the youth, and make it something seen as more normal and not scary, that we can make life easier for those who are living with mental illness.
Okay, so you did use the term ending the stigma, changing the stigma associated with mental illness. Mm-hmm. So once the students, I'm going to ask about the actual student presenters in a minute, but let's say sure. Some of the people who hear this presentation, either students or teachers, are interested in being allies. Mm-hmm. How can they sort of help with this, even if they themselves don't think that they have a diagnosable mental illness?
I mean, those are the people that we really need on board with us. So those are the people that I hope I am reaching out to the most sometimes. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm ignoring the other part of this, but being an ally means being open to hearing what someone else might be experiencing and not judging them based on what we've seen on TV, the misinformation that's been out there for years, and things along those lines. Join NAMI, become a member of NAMI. I invite them to educate themselves on mental illness and find out the reality of it. Many people believe that people that live with mental illness tend to be criminals, when in fact we are much more likely to be victims of crime than we are to be perpetrators. Getting those messages across and speaking out, you know, is for teens. One of the big things I like to impress upon them is, even if you're not the one using the language, if someone in your group is using the language and you know that they could be offending someone or that you know that's not appropriate, call them out for it. Spread that information that way. You know, educate other people that aren't in your circle. I mean, there's so many different ways. Volunteer with us at NAMI. So many different ways to get involved and be a supporter and ally. Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask you about the language because I thought that might be a big part of the presentation or the education, yes, that you're offering. Because I'm thinking of a comparison, since I'm a teacher educator, I've watched the language around special education evolve, mm-hmm, and how people are much better advocates for their peers and themselves than they used to be, because of the efforts that people have made around special needs education. And I assume it's sort of a similar process where you're saying, no, this is just something that means that you need a particular kind of help, not that there's something wrong with you.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the big one you hear is, people that are diagnosed will do it too. I am bipolar, or she is bipolar, or they are bipolar. We like to turn that around. We are not our diagnosis. We wouldn't call somebody cancer. We wouldn't call somebody diabetes. So this should be treated the same way. I am someone who lives with bipolar disorder.
Right.
You know, I'm still a person first. So that's a big one. There's other little ones in there. We no longer use the term commit suicide because it implies that you've committed a crime. So if someone passes, they passed from suicide or died by suicide or completed suicide. Even little things like that make a huge difference to people.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think, really getting the message out over and over again. So if you saw a friend break their leg, we would get medical treatment immediately. So let's get rid of that stigma behind mental illness or depression. If someone's seeking help for depression, it should be no different than seeking medical care. And so we want to get our message out that there are resources out there, in a similar way that medical resources out there for those diagnoses as well.
And I just want to share some pop-up trivia with you, but right now the average time from the time someone experiences their first symptom to the time they get help is 8 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. And the number one reason that's still as long as it is because of the stigma against it.
Which is really sort of a sad commentary, because we would never do that if somebody was experiencing low blood sugar. We would
exactly
try to, we would look at those symptoms and say, you need some assistance, and mm-hmm, you get them to a doctor. So that is, I'm sure this is really helpful for a lot of students to hear when you do the presentations. How do students get involved in the program, and how are they trained so that they safely share their personal stories?
So our youth presenters are usually 18 to, I think the cutoff is 30. So it's not necessarily students that are the youth presenters. I mean, some of them are college students, but it's not going to be the high school students that are giving the stories. We like it to be someone as close to out of high school as we can get, so they can still relate to the teenagers in high school and in seventh grade. But anyone can get involved. You just have to contact the NAMI office, our office in Racine, and tell us you'd like to volunteer. There's a application you have to fill out that we review, and then we'll do an in-person interview. The program is run by NAMI National, so they have a training that they have set up. So there's a very specific training that you go through, and it talks about, you know, what kind of language to use, how to talk to people about your mental illness. I mean, it's very in-depth, and we do require that the person be in a place of recovery, or, you know, a place of, like, stableness. We're not saying, obviously, you have to stay stable, but when you're doing presentations like this, it can be wearing on you. I mean, because you're sharing very personal information with strangers. So we want to make sure that they're okay with that. There's a lot of qualifiers that go through it before we just throw somebody out there.
Mm-hmm. And do they present just one at a time, or do you have, like, a team that presents together?
It's a team. So there's the lead presenter, which most of the time I am, but we have a couple other volunteers, and then the youth presenter. So there's always going to be two people there. The lead presenter does the PowerPoint presentation and talks about the signs and symptoms and, you know, like the more boring stuff, I guess, you know, the clinical stuff. And then the youth presenter will come up and share their story. You know, they'll usually start with their time in high school when they started noticing they were having symptoms and what their journey was along the way to get them to a better place.
I'm just going to reintroduce the program. You're listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of NAMI Racine County's program on teen mental health is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So I am going to just ask a bunch of questions about mental health in teens, because mm-hmm. I think a lot of people who are listening to this program probably have these questions, and I certainly do. So are there particular situations, times of year, hormonal changes, whatever it might be, that exacerbate mental illness in teens? Things that maybe parents, teachers, other friends can be aware of?
I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, outside factors can also always make things more difficult for you if you're someone who suffers with a mental illness. Hormones definitely can make a change, but hormones don't cause a mental illness. So you want to rule those things out first, I guess. And make sure it's not just a case of, you know, I'm an angsty teenager. Trauma. I mean, trauma is a huge thing with children, and is probably one of the leading causes of many mental illnesses in our youth. And things we don't think about, emotional, mental abuse at home, or from somebody else that they may know. Problems with school, if they're having a hard time in school because of a mental illness. I know I can speak for myself. It made high school very difficult for me. And so you tend to internalize that and think that there's something wrong with you. So if you notice, you know, them not going to school as much or things like that, it might be time to talk. Or at least go see your pediatrician and get other things ruled out first.
Oh, I see. So what are some indicators for, you know, parents or teachers that might be signs of anxiety, depression, or even suicidal ideation in teenagers?
I think...
Go ahead. No, that's fine.
I was going to just start with some of the students I've seen, and even in myself in those years, it manifests itself sometimes as physical symptoms. So rather than saying I'm depressed, they might have stomach aches, headaches, you know, not wanting to go to school, either sleeping all the time or not sleeping enough. those sorts of things we tend to keep an eye on.
Right. With suicidal ideation, I would pay attention to writings. If your kid is a writer, a lot of times they'll write things down that are going on in their head. Don't be afraid to ask them the question. I mean, if you're worried about them saying it out loud, a lot of time takes some of that power away from it. Like, are you thinking about committing or completing suicide? It kind of gets that deer in a headlight frozen moment, but they don't tend to lie. They usually are pretty honest about that. So don't be afraid to ask. Depression can come out as anger too. I know a lot of times we think of crying and being sad and mopey and stuff with depression, but it does present itself with anger, rage. If you have a kid who seems to be getting into a lot of fights or acting out in that way, that can be linked to anxiety and depression as well.
So sometimes we hear people talk about self-medicating as a way of coping mm-hmm. with an undiagnosed mental illness. Is that some of what you can sometimes see in teen behavior that might indicate a larger problem?
Yes. I mean, I'm going to speak from personal experience here. When I was in high school is when I really started experiencing symptoms. And I was 100% one of those kids that went to self-medicating. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the structure at home or the people in place to notice things going on with me. So I took it into my own hands and did a lot of that stuff up until I was in my 20s.
So I know that you said that you make presentations within health classes and to seventh graders. I assume their teachers mm-hmm. are present when you make
yes.
presentations.
Yes.
So is there a special, do you have a special training or presentation that's just for educators, or are there parts of the presentation that are aimed at the teachers so they can help? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do have Ending the Silence for faculty. So that's available as well. I've done that with a few different schools here where we can sit down with all faculty members and talk about what they should look for as teachers and what their resources are. And so then we make sure to work with the school so that we have the guidance counselors there and whoever else might be in their chain of resources. And then we also offer Ending the Silence to families as well.
Do you invite families to your, in normal times, do you invite them to your offices, or now are you doing it just within their homes and they're all on the same computer with you, or how does that work?
So that was something that we were working with RUSD with. They do these like parenting programs. Mm-hmm. And so we were offering it through RUSD as part of their parenting program. So anyone was welcome to come and join us. And then again, it's just going over what signs and symptoms are for, you know, teenagers and what to look for as a parent, what their resources are. Again, this is about reaching out as to many as people as we can.
Right. So they can ask.
Catch it early. Right. Yep.
And my next question was going to be about supports, but we did talk about that earlier, that you have supports there in your office, you have mm-hmm. groups that meet. And go from there. So I'm going to move on to the next section, which is really about how all of this has been affected by the crisis with the COVID-19 virus. So obviously schools went remote online in the spring, but not every student had equal access. And I'm sure that just, you know, for all students, there's always a subset for whom school is a safer and more comfortable place than home, and suddenly they're at home all the time. So I'm wondering if there was some support that you could offer, some things that you did differently once students were at home all the time.
So as far as with like Ending the Silence, we haven't done much with that. We have made our teen support group available through Zoom. We're doing that. We've had contacts with RUSD to get that information out to their students so that they know that this is available for them if they need to reach out. Really, that's what we've been hammering home, is that we're still here if you need us.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you think is more effective by doing it over Zoom, or less effective, or harder, or easier?
One opportunity we've had is we're collaborating with NAMI Kenosha to get some of their presenters and students, teenagers from Kenosha too. So for people who, for whom transportation might be an issue, or teenagers who maybe might want a little more privacy or anonymity, can certainly log in on Zoom in a way that is convenient and safe. For them, we go through NAMI Wisconsin with the Zoom protocol, so it's safe, it's private. There's registrations, so we really minimize any potential for hackers or people to get in there that could cause a trigger. But yeah, we've really found just that collaboration. We're hoping that we can continue this in virtual format as an option once whatever the new normal looks like. But to have some sort of a hybrid or a virtual option, continue on.
Okay, let me just do another reintroduction break. You are listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. Today we are discussing NAMI Racine County's program on teen mental health called Ending the Silence. It is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So what has been the hardest part for you with this teen program, but just with NAMI in general, around having everyone sort of sheltering in place last spring? Were you especially concerned about some of the people that you work with?
I think staying connected to each other is more difficult now. I mean, we are staying connected virtually, but I think anybody that you talk to would say it's different, you know, than being in person with something. And there are people that value that in-person connection very much. And so this has been very difficult for them. I would say that was probably the hardest part for not only us, but for the people that we serve.
Mm-hmm. Is there any advice that you've been giving to people to sort of help maintain their mental health during this sort of really unusual period? Because I have a feeling we might be going back into some sheltering in place later on. So maybe it's good for us all to be forewarned.
Right.
Yeah. We do a lot of, just even for our staff here and for ourselves, and just peer support and encouragement on self-care. I know from my own experience that kind of isolation and being at home can sort of spiral downward, and that isolation, that lack of human contact, can really be a trigger and can really spiral some symptoms. But we just keep getting the word out that we're here. We're here for the community in general. Our services are always free of charge and open to everybody. You know, we're always looking for allies. Our members at NAMI are like family. So part of my drive is really just reaching out, letting people know they're not alone, letting them know we're here.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to reach out. You know, I think that's what stops a lot of people. We're here, you know, even if it's just a phone call, sometimes that can be enough.
Maybe we'll do this again at the end, but maybe at this exact moment is a good time to share contact information for NAMI. How would people reach out to you? What's your website or the phone number? That's sort of the general one.
Our website is namiracinecounty.org. You can check out different resources and stuff that we have available on there. Our office number is 262 637-0582, and they can connect you to anybody that way.
Great. I'll make sure. I'll put this in the comments on the Facebook that I'll put up about this show, so that people, if you're listening and you have access to Facebook, you can go there and we'll have it there. But let's continue. What else do you have?
Oh, I was just going to say, we do have certified peer specialists on staff. So, I mean, we do have that as a resource. So that's available. And then we are on Facebook as well.
So let's say someone did call the number, maybe a teenager who is feeling anxious, maybe some symptoms have arisen since the sort of changes in the springtime around school, maybe they're worried about what's happening in the fall, which I think a lot of us are. What would be the next step if they called the number? What would happen?
We would talk to them more about, you know, what they're experiencing, what their concerns are, what they're looking for. So, like, let's identify the next step. You know, okay, we've identified you're experiencing some symptoms of anxiety and you're having a hard time with that. Is it getting in the way of what you're doing day to day? You know, we want to ask those kinds of qualifying questions. Do you have a doctor? Have you seen a doctor? Are you diagnosed? If they don't have those things, we give them the resources to reach out to a doctor, who, you know, what doctors are available. We don't recommend any specific place or anything like that, but we let them know there's a list of resources. We want to know if they've talked to their parents about it, if they would like help talking to their parents about it. I've done that more than a few times. I don't mind sitting down and, you know, I know it would be a phone conference now, but talking to their parents and letting them know, you know, we've had this discussion. We feel it might be a good idea for so-and-so to, you know, check in with a therapist or something.
Mm-hmm. And then if they were going to join, say, a support group or whatever, how would that look now? Is that all on Zoom or are you doing some other things?
It's all on Zoom currently. We are looking at doing in-person groups again, potentially, but like you said, with the way things are going, who knows, towards the end of the month, we're moving some things around in our office so their meeting space can be bigger and we can keep people socially distanced.
Mm-hmm. And we have some e-flyers that we can share with you, if you could also put them on your website or Facebook. Sure. Mm-hmm. And ours as well. It's just a very simple, just call or email us. We'll give you the Zoom link. So,
great.
And all are welcome. So.
Great. So, what do you think? What is something the general public probably doesn't know about the challenges of running a mental health program when you can't meet in person? some things that maybe even surprised you about this.
I don't know, Michelle, what are you thinking? I feel like people have a hard time because they can't see each other. I think that's probably been the biggest thing I've heard from people is, when can we start coming in again? When can we start coming in again?
Right.
So I think that's been difficult for a lot of our population. But I think that's with anybody right now too. It's not just specific to the mentally ill community. We're all missing that human connection right now.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I have to say, like, right now I'm talking to you on Zoom. And so I can at least see you, but it definitely is different than being in the radio studio to actually record in person and to shake your hand and to, you know, all of those things feel, and on some level, this is all very miraculous that we can do this at all. It feels like something that was, you know, a space age thing when I was a kid, that you'd be able to talk to multiple people and see them at once in a video phone or whatever. But at the same time, there is something really important about that human connection. And I think we're all probably missing that in general. And I feel like children and teenagers in particular, that is such an important part of their socialization and their emotional wellness and growth.
Yep.
And part of learning, because they're learning how to make relationships and learning how to, you know, function in a group, or, you know, how to make friends, or how to, you know, even beginning romance and those kinds of things.
Right.
They don't really have that option anymore, not in the same way.
Right.
So, it is a challenge. Is there anything, you know, that you think is sort of good about this? We talked about it a little bit earlier, but, what are some changes that maybe you're planning to make, in the future, even if things can go back to quote unquote normal?
Yeah, I think we'll always have, the virtual option, especially for teens. You know, I remember growing up in Racine, Kenosha felt so far away, and vice versa. So having that virtual option welcomes people from neighboring counties and their families. I think there's something to be said for connections on virtual options. So NAMI National, we just had our big national conference. It was supposed to be in Atlanta, but it was changed, like most things, to a virtual format. And rather than the usual 1,200 or 1,300, we had 22,000. So
wow.
People joined from all around the world. And I think that there were still the breakout sessions. There were still, you know, networking rooms that we could go into. So it wasn't the same as, you know, meeting someone for the first time and looking them in the eye and shaking their hands. But it was, I think, a really powerful way for us to share our journeys, our own, journeys with our mental illnesses and recovery, and coming from a place of strength and how to reach people. And there were teenagers who presented some of their platforms all the way through elder care, social isolation for the elderly. So people came from all over the world in a way that they probably wouldn't have been able to had we had the initial in-person plans. So that was one positive, I think.
And it sort of underlines the fact that the whole world is having this experience at the same time, right?
Yeah.
It kind of makes it more clear what we have in common rather than how we're different. So once again, you're listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sponsert, and this is Education Matters. We are discussing NAMI Racine County's program on teen mental health. It'll be archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You're invited to listen again there, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there, which is where I will also include information on how to find NAMI and their services. So, have you seen or do you anticipate changes in the relationships that you have with some of the clients that you serve, some of the groups that you foster, anything that might be different in the future because of this sort of unusual time that we're going through as a species?
I'm not worried about existing relationships. I feel like those are pretty solid. We have a good relationship with RUSD and other Racine County area schools. So I don't see that changing. I see what our platform we serve them with might be changing. I do think that there will be maybe a little bit more of a challenge making new relationships out there and getting things into, you know, schools we may not have had a chance to get into yet. That might be a little different. You know, there's something about, again, meeting in person, and people feel more at ease, you know, once they've met someone in person and we can explain what this is all about. And we're going to miss that. So not worried about existing relationships. New relationships are going to be different. Creating those and fostering those is going to be a different experience now.
So one of the things that I think listeners always comment on as being interesting to them is an unexpected or surprising positive thing that has come out of, it could be something out of this COVID period, or it could be just something that has happened within the Ending the Silence program that you recall that is a sort of, you know, without revealing names or details, something really positive to share with listeners?
I mean, there's a lot. I would say for me, connecting with some of the students has been incredible, because I can go back and to think about where I was when I was their age and what I would have given to have me, you know, to connect with at this point. And I've had some really meaningful relationships with some of the students because of that, and their parents. That's the best part of it for me, and I feel like that's very rewarding. We get comments from students all the time about how much they've learned, and you know, a lot of them, you know, 1 in 5 people live with a mental illness. That's a lot of people. So most of the times, everybody in the classroom has a connection to someone with mental illness. And I've had plenty of students come up to me afterwards and be like, you know, I never thought about it that way. I get comments all the time about how brave I am and, you know, how much it meant to them to see somebody that's gone through what they're going through and that mm-hmm. it gets better.
Michelle, do you have a story like that also?
I think I'm not a presenter with the students, but I've had just sort of spontaneous teachers, or I'll say I was at a breakfast one time and I was new to my role and people knew NAMI, and someone came up to me, one of the counselors, and said, "Oh, NAMI, ending the silence. We just had that in our middle school." And Nicole, the presenters, really made an impact, and they touched students in a way, and they got their attention in a way that we can't. So mm-hmm. I think there's something to be said for our lived experiences, for a peer model, the support that we get from NAMI to deliver these programs. You know, I've heard teachers from my own high school where I've graduated from, and I agree with them when they say, or we say, "I wish there was something like this when we were younger." Mm-hmm. And we never, as students, we never talked about it. The teachers never talked about it, but I would have loved at that age for a presenter to come and say, you know, if you're showing this, if you're having this, I think it would have been immensely helpful with anxiety and high achieving and all that perfectionism mm-hmm. stuff that sometimes takes us a lifetime to work through, or we don't recognize it till we're in our 40s or 50s. Yep. So when I hear that, not just from students, but from people our generation who have been helped by this program or wish it would have been there, that's kind of, I think, my driving force.
So if there, if listeners are listening to this, you can give the website again, but is there any way that they could get involved with NAMI as volunteers or maybe help raise funds, or maybe you have some annual events that people could participate in? Mm-hmm. Tell our listeners how they might be able to get involved in improving mental health in their community.
We do have a virtual fundraiser coming up on the night of September 25th, a night out with NAMI. Well-known Strangers is going to play in a sort of a virtual platform that night. We'll have an online auction, and we'll have speakers again talking about our lived experience with mental illness, service providers who've worked with the community. So that's going to be free of charge this year. So we certainly welcome your listeners to that. We can provide you with more information. We're always love to have volunteers. They can become members of NAMI. We give out newsletters. We do our virtual speaker series, which is coming out every month. So we are always welcoming people to attend. As far as becoming a volunteer, Nicole, do you want to speak to that?
Sure. If anyone's interested with volunteering with us, you can go to our website. Again, that's www.namiracinecounty.org, and there's a volunteer info page there. Or you can email me directly at nsmart@namiracine.org, and I can talk to you about what volunteer opportunities there are.
Nsmart, okay. I will put that on the Facebook page as well.
Thank you.
We are actually coming to the end of our time. I have learned a whole lot of things, and as I said, I'll probably make my future high school teachers listen to this presentation, and maybe some of them will want to participate in one of your presentations later on. So thank you very much, Michelle Gehring, Executive Director of NAMI Racine County, and Nicole Smart, Program Director. You are listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert. This is Education Matters.